So I'm going to call this meeting to order and thank you everyone for being in attendance. In place of the Pledge of Allegiance, which we've been doing for a while now, we are going to recite the first stanza of America the Beautiful. And I know Haley has it up there for us to read. So if everybody would join me in reading these very heartfelt lyrics. O beautiful for spacious skies, for amber waves of grain, for purple mountains' majesties above the fruited plain. America, America, God shed his grace on thee and crown thy good with brotherhood from sea to shining sea. And I think, you know, in looking back at it, and Haley just took it off the screen, we could easily say, and crown her good
personhood.
Brotherhood. Personhood. That's good. But I was going to say brotherhood and sisterhood. But either way, that's what I should have done. So we will update that for, I don't want to say political correctness. Let's say for human correctness. All right. Moving on, we have a quorum. Thanks, everybody, for being here. Agenda review, any deletions or additions? Seeing none. Haley, do we have a report? I know we have a new commander who's taken Justin Nelson's place. Do we have a report from Commander Stuart McDonald? He's available.
No, I don't. And I did remind him about the meeting a couple different times. So I'm guessing he's unavailable.
Okay. Well, hopefully it's nothing other than, it's nothing that is demanding of his time in a professional capacity. So let's move on to report from the fire chief. And William, how are you doing today?
Doing well, President Farmer. Thank you for letting us be here. I hope all of you are doing well as well. For the report today is on the month of September. We had a total of 70 emergency responses here in the community. We're running right now, we're at 655 for the year, which is still significantly less than where we were last year. This is still a downturn from all of the COVID changes and pandemic response. We're starting to see that uptick a little bit, but nobody in this area has fully, I don't want to say recovered to previous emergency responses, because that indicates that that's a positive thing. We have not responded back to the same number or same unique number that we are previously were in the county. I want to give you a really quick update in regards to fires in the state. You're starting to see, or should be starting to see on the news, that there's quite a bit of the fires have been getting being brought under control. There's still a lot of big fires burning, but they have good containment around quite a bit of those. Uniquely, if you look at a five-year average, there's about 700,000 acres of wildland that is burned every year. This year to date right now, we're just over 4 million, if that gives you any kind of comparative understanding of what the significance of what this year has done. And that is secondary to a little over 8,000 fires that have started in the state. There has been at least 60 arrests for arson related to those fires up in the state of California as well. I just think it's interesting to pass some of that stuff along so you kind of understand where we are as an agency and what and how we participate and help in that master mutual aid. We were able to provide a fire extinguisher training class for the admin group this last month. Very happy to be able to do that. The people in the office did a fantastic job. We are pursuing a PG&E grant for defensible space, which we were awarded. We're in the stages of getting all the right stuff signed to be able to get onto the properties. This is on the Village Lane project, that area of the hillside that goes up from Village Lane, the Tent City area, up towards where the proposed people's self-help housing and then the junior high. And we're doing some of the legal work behind the scenes now, but hope to be able to get that started relatively quick. And that project actually needs to be completed sometime in the middle of November. So that's primarily the removal of dead, diseased, and dying trees with minor disruption of the understory. So any help we can get there, we're actually able to tap into PG&E for that. So that's actually quite good. And lastly, I just wanted to share that we're almost done with our current reserve firefighter hire. We're proposing to bring 5 people on to fill some vacancies that we have on our department right now. I just wanted to thank our administrative staff, specifically Haley, for the coordination from the HR perspective and facilitating that and making it work. And John and the board and as a whole for supporting that process and getting us back to our where our numbers should be. So with that, I'm done with my report and I'm over to you for any questions.
All right. Thank you, William. Any members of the board have any questions or comments or affirmations for the chief? Yes, Director Pearson.
Thank you, President Farmer. Chief, glad to hear you're recruiting more reservists, but I understand we're having some trouble every now and then manning our complement of 3 people. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, if you want, I can actually take over the remainder of the meeting and discuss this ad nauseum. I will try to bring that into perspective real quick. As you know, we have been pushing for the SAFER grant and additional staffing. With the changes in the minimum requirements for reserve personnel and how the volunteerism concept, primarily on the west coast of California, in the United States, is really fading, it's extremely difficult to maintain minimally qualified personnel that want to stay and work in a reserve capacity and not use this as a stepping stone. I actually have a report for this that I'm working on right now. I'll be submitting to our general manager in a little while that directly addresses this issue. But what's happening is that we're getting very high level qualified personnel. It's a testament to our testing process and the people that are coming in. But our turnover is extreme, and it's very hard to maintain that level. And as you guys know, our staffing right now, our model is with 2 full-time personnel augmented with a reserve to get us to the minimum level of 3. And the reserve position right now is what we're talking about. So we have to have some serious discussions moving forward in regards to how to secure that 3rd position in a full-time capacity and ultimately work towards the 4th, which is the true NFPA standard. But it affects everything from our ability and response to how we meet certain policy and procedures at the county level with the 3 people on duty. So bottom line, today's a good example. I had to force hire one of our full-time people on to fill a reserve firefighter spot. It's not ideal. It does add a lot of workload to them, and it does, frankly, cost us and the district more money because that's a significant impact. But we are trying to address it with reserves and keep this moving until we can secure those additional personnel down the road. That's great. The very short answer to that.
Yeah, thank you. I'm looking forward to seeing the report that you give to the general manager.
Yes, sir.
So, Chief, I was a little, I don't want to say alarmed, but let's say curious, if nothing else, when you mentioned that you used the term turnover is extreme. Maybe you could take a minute or so to describe why that is. I think you've already presented the problem that it's created, but if you could elaborate on why that is taking place, and is this something that's been a constant or is it more recent?
It is something that has been, it's a really good question, President Farmer. It's something that's been growing over time. 20 years ago, we had a number of reserves that lived in this community that were meeting the minimum training level. And they, a lot of them already had full-time employment elsewhere, and they were truly doing this because they loved the job and they were trying to give back to the community. We still have right now a number of people that work for our agency that are highly dedicated, love this job and want to do nothing else, but they can't afford to live here and do this in a reserve capacity and make the minimum wage based off the few shifts they're able to get. So the people that we get in to fill these roles are meeting the minimum training requirement. It's the same level as a full-time person that would be working on the floor. But as soon as they're in the door, they're actively testing elsewhere to get full-time employment. So of the 5 people that we're bringing on right now, I expect that we're going to be able to get at least about a year's worth of work out of them while they're in the testing process and move on. It does create a revolving door in and about I could guarantee with a certain level of a surety that we're going to be losing a number of those five as they move through this process. You have to remember that the vast majority of people coming into this job now are looking for full-time employment.
So, Chief, I don't want to draw this out. I seem to recall, this is a few years back, when one of us, or perhaps myself, were questioning you about why we don't have a so-called volunteer fire department. And you were saying, well, in the past, it was a 72-hour commitment, training commitment, and then you became a volunteer. And now, because of various regulations and needs, it's now over 900. So anybody that's going to step in, even at a $13 an hour position, has spent roughly 900 hours preparing for that. Is that correct?
That's correct, and that's only one component of that training. We used to be able to bring people from a volunteer standpoint with almost no training and then train them on the go, if you will, and get them to that 70 or 80 hour minimum academy level. The minimum firefighter one academy right now is in excess of 800 hours. They also have to be an EMT one, which is a full semester of work for them through a local college. They also have to have what's referred to as a HAZMAT first operational responder certificate, which is another 40 hour course. That's all before they can even apply now. So this is a significant amount of money and time commitment on their part just to get to be able to fill out an application before they can even put their foot in the door. So it is fundamentally different now than it was 20 years ago.
All right, Chief. Well, thank you so much. And good luck in hiring and retaining some of those reserves for an extended period of time.
Looking forward to presenting them to you as soon as we can.
Thank you. David, I think David has one more comment. So I'm waving his hands, as does Director Rice.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure you got everybody else.
Okay. Oh, sorry. Well, I didn't see any hands up on the side. So people are raising physical hands. So
No, actually, Director Rice and I both have our hands up on the side.
All right. Let me. Okay. The problem is yours truly. My apologies. All right. So, Vice President Steidel, why don't you go ahead and then we'll go to Director Rice.
Just as a follow-on question, Chief Hollingsworth, you had indicated you were pulling together a report, and I'm wondering if an element of that report takes a look at the cost for this process of turnover and the investment that we make in training versus the idea of what it costs us to bring someone on full time. I mean, at some point there has to be a break point to that says we spend more money by going through this training and the revolving door than it does just to say, bite the bullet and bring in a full-time person.
Director Steidel, you have a very good point. The report that I'm putting together right now is really from a risk reduction and liability standpoint, just so we have a clear understanding of what we're talking about. What you're talking about, which is absolutely valid and will become a part of the discussion in my vision moving forward, is the justification for how we affect change down the road. So I'm hoping what this does is really just open the door to that discussion, and we can and have those conversations on how we're going to be able to meet all those requirements, meet the minimum suggestions from NFPA and the state regulations, but then balance that with some financial stability as well. So it's all part of the same discussion.
Thank you.
All right. Director Rice, before I call on you, I just want to acknowledge the fact that one of the members of the public wishes to speak, and I'll go to them right after you. So Director Rice, go ahead.
Thank you, President Farmer. When you were talking, Chief Hollingsworth, about the EMT and the number of hours of training, is that our agency based on NFPA standards, or how much of that is specific to our district and how much is
the standard you're talking about is the accepted norm among the vast majority of fire departments across at least across the Central Coast and across California. So if you were to apply for an entry-level firefighter position with any career department within this county, These would be the minimums, if not more. There are agencies in this county that still are choosing to operate in what would be called a volunteer capacity. The two that come to mind are San Miguel and Santa Margarita that have a very low population base, and they still have some people there that are able to affect a staffing model that they're able to sustain. For the most part, those people are still meeting those standards. However, they do still acknowledge a lower level at those departments, which is referred to as a paid call firefighter. We have not had that position here in excess of 10 years. And the primary reason behind that is that we were not able, after numerous subsequent hirings, being able to get anybody in the community that was minimally trained to that lower level that was interested to participate, on top of which it significantly affects all of your response protocols when you have people that are trained to a different minimum standard that cannot affect the same rescues and things like that that the community here enjoys from our department.
Okay. Just two really quick things. I hope that report will include something about level of service and the trade-offs related to staffing and levels of service, like how fast you get, what things we can provide in terms of those things. Two other just different topic. Have we heard from PG&E about a power, you know, they're going to shut the power off here? I know they've been doing it across the state for, you know, because it's going to be windy and it's hot. And the other question is can you just briefly speak to our new deal with Nixle?
Oh, sure. Regarding PG&E, we typically are advised well ahead of time of a proposed power outage. To date, the fire department or CCSD has not been advised of any such outage in this plan for this area. If that changes, I will be speed dialing our general manager to make sure we get that out to everybody in within our district and within the community. Secondly, regarding Nixle, as most of you are probably aware, we have been doing a trial study with Nixle, which is an emergency alert platform through your smartphone devices. It's a application that you can download. And for a long period of time, we were able to utilize it to be able to push information out to the community, everything from emergent level down to just informational. About 6 months ago, maybe a little bit longer, they changed the way they were doing their work and then turned it into a subscription service, which is capitalism at its best. So they're trying to make money with the product they're doing, I applaud the effort. What we have done is, after a lot of trial and error, we've entered into a contract so we can continue that capability. We're still in some of the setup phase of this. But what this will let us do is, for everybody that has the Nixle application, it's an alert-based system, and we can push out everything from, today would be a good example, we had some training with our helicopters and rescue boats just north of town. We could put out an alert advising the community, just information, we're doing this training. If you see anything going on, you're welcome to watch. Please stay clear of the area type stuff. We can advise them that there is a commercial structure fire at the intersection of Main and Burton, and we are closing the roads down and doing an evacuation. We can advise them that we are doing a series of burn piles on this day, this morning. So it's all about enhancing our communication with the community and informing the people that live here to the best of our ability.
Thank you, Chief.
Yep.
Yes, thank you, Chief, for that update. Haley, we have a member of the public that wishes to speak. Would you call on them, please?
Yes, Tina Dickinson would like to speak. Tina, go ahead and unmute yourself.
Thank you, Haley. Good afternoon, board and staff. One of the more recent meetings, Chief Hollingsworth said that there were still, oh my goodness, I'm losing my train of thought, but fire hydrants that still have to be tested. I'm really kind of having some issues with why that was ever given that test to the water department instead of the fire department, but even more so right now after we have and are experiencing fires like we've never seen before in our state. I read the grand jury report from 15-16. I posted it on social media, but though we were given, the fire department and the district, specific requirements from that report that really are sobering. And to think that we still have not finished that task 4 years after the report is alarming. And I'd like to know why we can't have the fire department work in tandem with the water department and get this one requirement taken care of ASAP. Thank you.
Chief, did you wish to respond? I mean, you don't necessarily have to, but did you wish to?
I can if you would like me to. We've talked about this at numerous meetings. I think Tina has brought up a really excellent point. When the report came out from the grand jury was right after or right before, my timing might not be correct, when we were able to have the safer positions on the fire department a few years ago, and we had additional staffing. The fire hydrants within the community are part of the water department infrastructure. And although we are primarily the only ones that use them, if you look at every community model that is utilized around here, the water department services and maintains the fire hydrants. At that time, the water department had very limited staffing and the fire department had we had adequate staffing and were able to identify time periods where we could free up personnel from their regular tasks and training requirements to go out and affect some of those hydrant maintenance issues. We got about halfway through that and we lost our safer personnel and had to cut that back and essentially turn it back over to the water department, who has been able to, in the meantime, bring some extra people on. And I know Jim Green is effectively doing that right now. He's been moving through those very well, and Ray is supporting that process significantly. If we find issues, we bring them up directly to Jim, and he's able to fix them quickly. And I know that his plan is to continue to move through those. But now that they are back within the water department's purview, which is where they should be, it is now being reported under their utilities manager.
All right, Chief. Well, thank you very much. I know Jim is in attendance, and if he wishes to speak on this, he can. We have one member of the board here that wishes to speak. Director Howe, go right ahead.
Thank you. Just a brief question on the Nixle app. The charge, the subscription charge, is that paid by the district or is that by the individual users?
It's a really good question. There are no charges to the end user, and it's all paid for under a part of my operational budget for the fire department, which we had already planned for. So it's entirely free to the community.
My next question then is, how do we spell it and how do we get it?
That's good. We can put that information on the website again. We've had it up there before. It is Nixle, N-I-X-L-E. And then you search for our location. And if you have any problems with that with Cambria, please feel free to call me here at the office and I can help walk you through it.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Chief.
Yes, sir.
Not seeing any more comments from board, staff, or the public, Chief, I think you can just kind of relax here for a little while and enjoy the rest of the meeting. And thanks for all your very, complete answers to the concerns that many of us have voiced. All right, Chief. All right, let's move on to item 3 and public comment. These are items that folks might wish to speak on that are not on the agenda today. Haley, do we have anyone out there in the public that wishes to speak in public comment at this time?
Yes, I do have Christine Heinrichs that would like to speak, and she just raised her hand, so I'll bring her into the meeting.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I asked the board to provide information today about the progress of the CDP application for the emergency water project. It was filed with the county in July and evaluated then as 13% complete. The district spent 6 years getting it to 13% complete. It has not advanced in the 3 months since then. I asked the board to request a full and complete report from the utilities manager and the general manager as to what is needed and why it has not been provided. One of the issues was the lack of an in-stream flow study, which the utilities manager said would be done in August and at least part completed in October. I was never clear on how they could do an in-stream flow study when the creek was not flowing, but has that been done? What are the results? The Coastal Commission expressed concerns over the adequacy of the district's proposal for the in-stream flow study. Have those been satisfied? Please give the public a full details. Another issue raised by the Coastal Commission is that the project was constructed entirely in environmentally sensitive habitat area, and that the commission asked the district whether any elements of the project can be moved out of ESHA and what mitigation would be provided for the damage done by whatever needs to stay there. What progress has been made on this? What is the district proposing to make this project eligible for a permit? What's going on with the adaptive management plan? What progress has the district made in working with the other agencies whose approval is required? California Fish and Wildlife, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, State Water Resource Control Board, state parks, and others. The county's website indicates that no additional material has been submitted since the application was filed 3 months ago. I won't go into the deficiency of submitting a permit application that the district has spent 6 years preparing and submits only 13% complete. Now, 3 months later, no progress. Please tell the community what specifically is being done to address the 9 pages of information the county asked for to complete this application. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Ms. Heinrich. I'm sensing that when Mr. D'Anzo gives his utilities report, he'll be able to address at least some, if not all, of your concerns that you just voiced. Thank you. Haley, it looks like we have two other folks in attendance who wish to speak. Could you call on them, please?
Yes, Elizabeth Benhausen is the next person that wishes to speak.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I raise an issue that is...
Elizabeth? Elizabeth, excuse me for interrupting you, but we can barely hear you.
I will move my microphone closer. Does that help?
It helps a little bit. Perhaps if you speak up a little as well. I know you're already doing that, but let's give it another try.
Does that help?
Oh, yeah, that's much better. Thank you so much.
It's a different connection on my hard whatever box drive, whatever they call those things.
I'm with you on that.
I want to address an issue that is not on your agenda and has not been on your agenda for a decade, and that is the question of the development of the community park in East Fiscalini Ranch Preserve. And I want to ask a specific question because it has come up. I don't expect an answer today, by the way, so please don't construe this as a question needing an answer today. But it's going to need an answer soon, given what PROS is working on. And I want to pose the question this way because it's come up in another context as well. In the Exhibit A of your action back in 2009, it says CCSD water pump station relocation. An existing CCSD water pump station would be demolished and relocated outside of the Santa Rosa Creek floodplain. The new replacement pump station would be located within the East FRP, Fiscalini Ranch Preserve, adjacent to the proposed community park area. The new pumping station building would be approximately 2,000 feet square in size and include a pump room, emergency generator room, electrical room, and storage room. Now, I bring this to your attention, and not that you've been looking at this carefully in the past week, I'm sure, but it's one of the major items of resources and infrastructure and capital improvement that is on this board's agenda for decades. And I urge you to bring this up in a imminent agenda, because a grant to PROS is contingent upon how the current board construes the community park plan revised. So it's my want, as you know, to remember things back from 2002 when I moved here. And I am sorting through my 3-ring binders. I'm getting the distinct pleasure of filling up the blue bin with CCSD material. But I assure you, I am not throwing it all away. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bettenhausen. Haley, we have one more member of the public that wishes to speak.
Yes, the next member of the public that wishes to speak is Tina Dickinson. Tina, go ahead and unmute yourself.
Thank you, Haley. Thank you, President Farmer. I have two items for public comment. The first is that I think it was around August 24th, Mr. D'Enzo sent his scope of work to the Coastal Commission, state parks, various agencies. And then Mr. Luster responded, I believe it was on September 22nd, to that scope of work. I asked a member of the board if they had received either one or both of those reports, and the individual had not, a member of the board. And so I sent to each member of the board the scope of work and the response from Mr. Luster to that scope of work. I have not received one single response from any member of this board. Not that you have to, but since staff apparently was not advising every member of the board, this is a huge item, the in-stream flow study. I thought it would be sort of near the top of the list. So that's one thing. The other thing is I was going through my bills from CCSD, and a bill for five units in 2014, right before the increase for the EWS, the loan, the lease sales agreement, was $96.61 for five units. My most recent bill for five units is $218.07. That's a difference of $120.46. My Social Security, as everyone else's, the COLA is 1.3% for this next year. These bills have gone up in 6 years, have gone up way more than double. And yet not a drop of water has come for us to use from the project that we have paid more than double the original cost, way more than double. So I just want folks to be aware of what this project that still isn't functioning has cost us in terms of our billing. So that's for your information and for anybody else who's out there listening. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dickerson. Director Rice, you wish to address this item?
Just briefly, because I don't want to get into discussion, but the double the cost of the rates isn't only the new equipment that we have, it's also contributing to our ability to maintain and upgrade other parts of our system. And on, I'm just going to pat myself on the back a little bit with Dr. Bettenhausen, because I actually just listened to the meeting where they went over the EIR for the park plan. So it's not just you looking at those things. I'm glad that you raised the issue, because I had a question about the pump station too, and whether that refers to the one that's down there that's 60 or 70 years old that we've known for a long time we needed to replace or not. And it's not clear from listening to the meeting whether it is, but thank you for those comments. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Director Rice. It doesn't appear as if there are any more public comments and items not on the agenda. I do want to mention that since we've been hearing the voice of our deputy district clerk, Ms. Dodson, just to inform you, and I think most of us out there in the public, and especially on the board and staff, know how hard Haley works. Haley is presently on vacation, sitting, you tell us where you are right now, Haley.
I'm actually in Reno right now.
There you are. Sitting in a hotel room in Reno, and yet helping us conduct this meeting while she's on vacation. So, Haley, two thumbs up and a tip of the hat to you, and thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. So let's move on to item four in the consent agenda. And I wish to address, if you don't mind, item 4C, which is regarding the cancellation of the November 12th regular meeting. In arranging the agenda to meet, it turned out that the only item that wound up being on the November 12th meeting was the PROS Commission report, and there weren't any other items that could really be shoehorned into it that were either available or ready or whatever. And so we're proposing canceling that meeting. And just to put it in perspective, well, obviously, therefore, the meeting on the 19th will be a little bit longer because of the PROS Commission report and perhaps whatever else might come up. This will save the district $500 in attendance by the members of the board, as well as about $250 from AGP. So this is going to be a minor, but nevertheless, financial savings, as well as, like I say, still operating hopefully as efficiently or inefficiently, as some people would say, as possible with regard to the meeting on the 19th. So I just wanted to bring that up. If somebody wants to pull this for more discussion and consideration, we can do that. I just thought I'd run that by your ears. So Director Rice.
I would like to pull consent agenda item C, and if appropriate, I would move adoption of items A and B.
I would second that.
Okay. Director Howell, you wish to make a comment?
No, thank you. Not at this time.
Oh, I thought I saw you had your hand up.
It did. It went up several times, up and down. But I think everybody said what I needed.
So you're just flicking that button that says mute, unmute, mute, unmute.
Yeah. Just playing. Okay.
Sorry. All right. That's no problem. But before we have a vote on approving the consent agenda, I would just like to have a brief explanation, let's say, because I know I'm not the only person that noticed in the expenditure report that there are 41 entries regarding water department refunds, which is highly unusual with regard to the amount. So I thought perhaps General Manager Weigold could just give us a brief explanation as to why that was.
Sure. So whenever we have an exchange of positions and sales between parties, we charge a deposit of $500 for that transaction, and of course in the manner of a deposit, and then after our costs are figured out, we refund the difference. What you see typically on this report is a catch up of some of the transactions going back some time where we've been holding on to a deposit. And so we're doing some cleanup there. Generally speaking, what happens is each party generally will be responsible for half the $500 amount. So you'll see an amount associated with a specific APN for $250. And then there'll be a debit. Most of them are around $107.48. And then we'll refund $142.52 to one of the two parties in each transaction. So I think there are about 20 transactions on here amounting to roughly about 40 different light items.
All right. Well, General Manager Weigel, thank you so much. We have a motion and a second to approve items A and B, and to pull item C for consideration and discussion. So Haley, would you do a roll call, please?
Sure. Director Rice?
Aye.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
Director Howell?
Aye.
Vice President Steidel?
Aye.
President Farmer?
Aye. So just want to ask legal counsel, this would probably be the time to discuss item 4C.
Yes, indeed, President Farmer.
All right, thank you. So I'm assuming since we've pulled this item for discussion and consideration, Director Rice, I'm going to assume that you wish to make a comment or two.
I do. Thank you, President Farmer. This year, we have not gotten finished with quite a number of items when we've had two meetings per month. Including just looking at the minutes from this specific meeting, the item we just passed, the First Amendment public forum, input from the public regarding a strategic plan, prioritizing items assigned to the policy committee. So the policy committee has a set of priorities based on what's already assigned, as opposed to what we want them to do. Transfer of positions, water efficiency, conservation. We could be doing a demonstration or talking about the rebates that we do. We have the board vacancy. I don't know when that will be ready to come back, but we asked for that to come go back to policy and then come back to the board. And we will. And Director Howell, I believe, at the last meeting requested a further discussion on the emergency declaration and what specific powers that might engender to the GM. I think there are plenty of things that we can get onto the agenda that don't require a lengthy staff report or a lot of staff time, because I'm going on the assumption that that's part of the issue, is that a lot of the things that the board could be taking up that would require a decision also require a fairly complex staff report. But many of the things I listed, we could benefit as a board from having a discussion about. There's also the possibility of, there's over 100 CSDA, the California Special District Association, has 100 on-demand webinars. We could have a meeting where we all watch one of those together. And some of them include Brown Act compliance during the pandemic, California's climate adaptation framework, collaborating remotely, exercising legislative authority as a board, why special districts need to be involved in LAFCO. I mean, there's strategic planning for special districts. There's a lot of webinars that, in theory, correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Carmel, that if it was a noticed public meeting, we could watch, the public could watch with us, and we could have a discussion about, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Carmel, on that. But I would urge us to not cancel a meeting. There's too many meetings where we've not even finished what we have done. I'd also like to point out, and this is an entirely selfish comment, and I acknowledge that, I've only got 2 meetings left after today. You're going to take one of them away from me? It's less about the $100. I just want to be able to participate in some of the discussions that are going to be happening before I'm gone. Those are my comments on the item.
All right. Director Howell, you wish to comment as well?
Thank you. Well, first of all, what she said. Everything that Director Rice said, I absolutely agree with. The other thing I would point out, just as a minor matter, is that if you dispense with a scheduled meeting, you also dispense with the opportunity for the public to talk to us. And in view of the fact that one of the biggest complaints we've had, certainly was when I was running, is that the board was not open to the public and not open to listening to what the public had to say. Now, this board has been very good about that, so this is not at all a criticism of anybody sitting here. But just to point out that to cancel a meeting cancels the public's ability to talk to us. And for that reason alone, I would vote against canceling the meeting. In addition, however, I will say that just a second, one thing is that the fact that we have almost without fail, not 100%, but almost without fail, we have run over every single time. And I am not real sanguine about continuing in that mode. So I definitely, we need to have our 2 meetings, and we need to use our time well. And if we do that, I think we should be fine. One last thing, if we were to cancel that meeting, it would be 4 weeks until the next one. And a lot can happen in 4 weeks, and we might suddenly be faced with an 8-hour meeting. And believe me, that's not a place we want to go. So I definitely urge my fellow board members to vote to not cancel. I don't know how we would do that, but to not cancel the next meeting. Thanks.
All right, Director Howell, thank you so much. We have 2 members of the public that wish to speak. Haley, I see. Director Pearson, why don't I go ahead and let you speak, and then we'll go to the public. Thank you.
I was going to do it the other way around, but that's okay. I agree that we have a number of items that we could put on the agenda for that first meeting. And if we were to cancel that, I would suggest that we'd have to have that second meeting at least 4 hours. I think that would have to go. If we cancel the one, we have to at the same time recognize that the second one would have a minimum of 4 hours to go. We may finish earlier than that, but with what's on the agenda and stuff, I'm not sure. I know that we're going to get a first quarter update on the budget, or I hope so. And the other is possible audit report at that second meeting. So we need to look at all the things that Director Rice brought up and stuff. There was another one, salary increases for the management team have to be addressed. And I think that might happen at the first or second meeting also. So I think there's a lot to be on the November agenda, whether that's one meeting or two. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Pearson. Haley, once again, we still have two members of the public that wish to speak on this. So if you would call on them, please.
Sure. The first member of the public that wishes to speak is Elizabeth Benhausen. Elizabeth, go ahead and unmute yourself.
Thank you very much, Ms. Dodson, and thank you very much, President Farmer. I want to add a dimension here. I am, after all these years, baffled as a member of the public on how an agenda gets formed for this board of directors. It's not at all clear to me who does it. It's not at all clear to me what the criteria are in establishing an agenda. So I would really appreciate it that if you have a little extra time at your second meeting in November, you set aside approximately 15 minutes to discuss as a board who sets up the agenda, what the criteria are, and what your expectations are when you establish a time limit on agenda items. That would really help me as a member of the public because I don't get any sense of who is providing oversight of the agenda over months and years of this board. And many of the issues that Director Rice has brought up are germane to discussion by the board, but they never seem to show up very much on the agenda. So please let us public, wonderful, dear public know. And so that what I call the Holy Trinity can comment, that is, on the three women who are commenting today in public comment, we can comment with some awareness of how something got on the agenda. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Bettenhausen. Haley, we have another commenter from the public.
Yes, the next member of the public that wishes to speak is Tina Dickinson. Tina, go ahead and unmute yourself.
Thank you, Haley. Thank you, President Farmer. Well, I guess I'm making up today for what I didn't show. I didn't show up for the last meeting. I find the whole thing really weird that you run over. You always have to get extensions of time because you can't make it in your 3 hours. I recall when we had meetings for years that started at 12:30, lunchtime, p.m., and went until 6:30. It seemed to be fine. I mean, it worked. It was long. So then the newest board decided we should have two meetings a month, and you still can't get the work done. I've said at the last meeting I attended that I think too many people on the board tend to rattle on way too long, and pretty much make the same comments three or four times in a row that they made the first time. So maybe conserve your own comments a little bit and be more focused. That might help. But I do believe that the district is facing so many challenges, so many issues, that to not have a meeting November 12th doesn't make sense. I, like Elizabeth Bettenhausen, also wonder who is setting the agenda. I thought I knew who was supposed to be setting the agenda, but suddenly we find out, oh, the November 12th, we're not going to have a meeting. Not too long ago, a meeting was canceled. Why? So who's running the show behind who should be running the show would be my question. And let's be fair to the people of this community, although it does seem to be quite in regular fashion that three women tend to be paying the most attention. I would say that. I wish maybe more listening. Let's hope.
But I do believe that you're going to need this time, and I hardly can imagine that PROS is the only agenda item that you would have had for the November 12th meeting. So get your heads together and change it and get some work done on November 12th for all of us. Thank you.
Director Rice, you wish to make a final comment here, please?
I just wanted to let the commenters know that the process for putting the agenda together and who is responsible is part of our bylaws. It is put together by the general manager in consultation with the president and the vice president. If there's a board member that wants to put an item onto an agenda on a future meeting, we do it during the future agenda items, preferably by a motion, so there's a record of us wanting to have something put on an agenda. I think there's an item that I had a motion that was successful to put something on the agenda in 2014. I still never saw it on an agenda to today. So that's how the agenda gets put together. It relies on the president, vice president, and general manager, and timely things are really put at the top of the list. I just thought I'd add that. Since you've been president, maybe you have a different insight.
I would say that's pretty much the same, and you were president for 2 years, so you should know twice as much about that as I do.
Under a different GM.
I was just trying to be a little, add some humor to a rather less than humorless topic that we're discussing right now. I also want to mention that legal counsel Mr. Carmel is also involved in advising us during the agenda, setting up of the agendas. Director Howell, you wish to make a comment? And I do want to mention that in hoping to save time by just having that one meeting, I believe this discussion has gone on for over 20 minutes now with regard to whether we're going to have the meeting or not. And I would say probably this is a good thing, how the sausage is or isn't being made, so to speak. So, Director Howell, you wish to make a final comment?
Yes, and hopefully brief. Just to point out that just because we have, generally many of our agendas seem to be driven by what's going on, we very seldom have a chance to be proactive. So as Director Rice pointed out, if you have a very small agenda, it's a great opportunity to add some things that we would all like to get to, but there are too many other more important things in the way. So it should be reviewed as an opportunity in any case. That idea went through my head. I thought I'd share it.
Well, that's a good comment to end this discussion on. So with regard to this item, I'm trying to remember now. Do we have a motion and a second to not follow through, let's say, on item 4C, and to actually, how would we word that, an agenda item to hold the regular monthly meeting on November 12th, bigger bi-monthly meeting on November 12th? So could somebody make a motion and second that?
President Farmer?
Yes.
No action is necessary.
You don't need it. Yeah.
No action is necessary. The meeting will just happen. Don't need to take action to cancel it.
Cool. All right. Thank you. Thank you for everybody that participated, public and board members as well. Vice President Steidel.
So I would like to suggest, on the basis of the conversation that's just gone on, there is an agenda review meeting that we'll be holding on the 21st of October. And it sounds to me like there are any number of suggestions that haven't been brought up in future business that have been put out for consideration. And I would encourage each one of the directors to send some of those ideas or desires on to the GM so that they can be discussed as part of the agenda meeting on the 21st.
All right, Vice President Seidel, thank you so much. And obviously, all of us board members will listen back to the comments that were made by Director Rice and Director Pearson with regard to items that we can put on the agenda for the 12th. So, yes, Director Rice, one more comment?
I just wanted to say it's also, you can call the minutes that we've passed for other meetings throughout the year, because the many of the ideas that I came up with came directly from the minutes from today's binder. So that's the other place that you could look to see if there's something that, that the board members seem to have given direction we'd like to see on an agenda.
All right. Well, thank you. And so if I can just add that this was a rather healthy discussion on a somewhat, let's say, touchy topic, so to speak. And I think a lot of clarity was given as to the value of a meeting, not that we didn't need that, and the value of input from both the directors and the public. So thank you all so much. Moving on to 5A and regular business. And let me pass this on to General Manager Weigold.
Thank you, President Farmer. Agenda item 5A is discussion and consideration of adoption of Resolution 50-2020, amending the district salary schedule and establishing a pay schedule for the position of board secretary. Staff is recommending that the board adopt this resolution, amending the salary schedule and establishing a pay schedule for the position of board secretary. So this is the third, this is the second in three steps of a reorganization I'm doing within the staff. The first one was back in June. As you recall, we escalated two positions to wastewater and water superintendent roles, and we established a project manager role as well as a in a project manager role. That completed the utility side of the house. I'm now focusing on the administrative side. As of October 2nd, we no longer have an admin department manager. With the departure of Monique Madrid. As a result of that, I am disaggregating that role into two smaller roles. The first is the board secretary that you have before you. So that admin department manager role had a significant salary associated with it. So what we're doing is creating two separate roles from that. So we're seeing, as a result of this role, a savings of about $61,000 plus benefits for the remainder of this fiscal year. So it will be significantly more in the future. The former administrative department manager position responsibilities were split three ways. So every single job was split up between the finance manager, the board secretary, new board secretary role, and another role that I'll be coming back to you with, which will be a combination of HR and IT, which will probably be in the November, December timeframe when we finish cleaning up the position description for that role, as well as the compensation. So we've completed interviews for a board secretary, and I'm ready to hire, pending your decision today. We've done a salary investigation across the county to come up with this salary schedule. I've included the position description in your package. I think you've all had a chance to look at that. We've also shared this and got approval through the SEIU union, which is required in advance of board action. With that, I'll turn it back over to you, President Farmer, for board discussion.
All right. So any members of the board wish to make any comments on this item? Director Rice.
Thank you, President Farmer. Sorry, I had to find my mouse. Before I even say anything, I want to acknowledge that the personnel policies and procedures that we currently have in place authorizes the GM to do precisely what he's doing as long as he gets approval from the board. And I'm just going to pick one nit and the job description itself, because I know that you've gone through these and in previous discussions with you You've explained a few things, but there's one part of one of the key responsibilities. It's on page 36, sixth from the bottom, starts with the words updates and maintains. And the final clause in that sentence is, and facilitates training to ensure compliance with these documents. I've not been in an organization since I worked for the school board in Louisiana. So I don't know if that even counts as an organization, but it seems to me training is something that should be under the purview of somebody who's in charge of HR, rather than somebody who's in charge of records. And again, I'm okay with approving this as it is, but I just would like you to consider that, and I could be 100% wrong, that facilitating training might be something that is completely appropriate and is something that in most districts this position would do. So it's only just a thought that occurred to me as I was rereading it. And I definitely... after we hear from the public, I definitely support this and would make a motion once we're at that point.
All right. Thank you, Director Rice. Haley, I see we have a member, two members of the public that wish to speak on this item. So if you would, Vice President Seidel, I see that you have your hand up. Why don't I go to the, if you don't mind, I'll just go to the two members of the public and come back to you. Thank you. Sure. So Haley, would you please call on them, please?
Yes. The first member of the public that wishes to speak is Tina Dickinson. Tina, go ahead and unmute yourself.
Thank you, Haley. Is the board overlooking the general manager, overlooking the position of what we have always had of a district clerk, a certified district clerk? What is going on? We're hiring secretaries and various other people. What about a district clerk? Please tell me why that is being overlooked. Haley, as I understand, is taking on some different responsibilities. So who will be the district clerk or acting district clerk? And why is no consideration being given at this time? Thank you.
Okay, the next member of the public that wishes to speak is Christine Heinrichs. Christine, go ahead and unmute yourself.
Thank you, Haley. I was encouraged to see a board secretary being added to the district, but I was disappointed when I read the job description. The board secretary does not report to the board. That person will report to the general manager. The board needs its own secretary to keep track of its actions and support the directors. I'm encouraged that the general manager proceeded on his own authority to advertise an interview for this position without waiting for the board to act to create it. But I ask that the board look to its own interests and make sure that the person hired is charged with responsibility to the board, not the district staff. Please ask the general manager to revise the job description so that it reflects the board's interests and advising the applicants of the change in responsibility. I appreciate the general manager's reorganization of the district's personnel. It's long overdue. Getting the district to operate more efficiently and less expensively is welcome. Cost savings can be applied to hiring a forest ecologist, a position that should have been filled years ago. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Heinrichs. Vice President Seidel, you wish to speak?
Thank you, President Farmer. So I guess in to the item that Director Rice had the question about, I guess what I'm asking for is a clarification from the GM about what is meant by facilitates training to ensure compliance with these documents. If what that means is the same type of thing that Haley has provided, facilitates may be being misinterpreted in this regard. Because if it's a matter of just, you know, keeping track of who has, done the updates for the Brown Act training, and if there is sexual harassment training compliance, and that's happened. I get the point that it could be argued either as this or something that's an HR function. But, you know, the notifications to the board members when they have an obligation for something and keeping track of the certificates that go on with that does seem something that would be associated with the board secretary. And so that's why I'm not sure what the facilitates means in this statement. And I was just looking for clarification in that.
All right. I see that we have one more member of the public that wishes to speak, but Senator Manager Weigold, perhaps you can address the comments that were made by Director Rice and Vice President Stidell, as well as the comment from Tina Dickerson regarding eliminating a title and a title and a position that has been around for a long time. Maybe you can address both of those, and then we'll go back to the public. Are you okay with that?
Sure, absolutely. So my sense on what regarding facilitating training, first of all, there's a lot that we all need to understand when it comes to board work, transparency, and legal issues. The board secretary does a lot of interaction, mostly with board members, the various committees, as well as with our district council. So I'm not privy to all those discussions all the time, so I'm unaware sometimes what training needs to happen for whom. So this person's going to have that ability to understand who is lacking in what areas to bring it to my attention so we can bring those up to speed. For example, if we have new board members come on, who will perform that role? The board secretary will be in charge of facilitating training mm-hmm. for the new board member. Or if new standing committee members come in, the board secretary will be in charge of facilitating the required training, the ethics training and the like for those. So there's a big role for training for the board secretary. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Okay.
That was my perception of the wording. And so, yes.
Sure. Regarding public comment, two easy answers there. The board secretary is a role that's interchangeable with district clerk. We studied that and coordinated with district council. Regarding a direct report to the board, that is in our organization bylaws, the organization of how we work. And I don't see a board secretary working directly with an entire board as something that's going to lead to success. It just coordination wise would be very difficult in that fashion. But of course, that's up to the board to decide if they wanted to ever change that.
All right. Thank you, General Manager Weigold. I saw a brief chuckle from Director Pearson. He didn't raise his hand. Did you wish to comment at all, David, or just smile?
Well, we have a hard enough time corralling the general manager, let alone corralling the board secretary too. So I really would like the general manager to be in charge of that person. And I at the same time will move approval of this resolution and allow the general manager to hire the board secretary.
All right, I'll ask for a second, and then we do have a member of the public who has been waiting a while to speak.
I'll second.
Thank you. Haley, could you call on the member of the public, please?
Yes, the next member of the public that wishes to speak is Gordon Heinrichs. Gordon, go ahead and unmute yourself.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you very much. You're getting the cart before the horse here a little bit, because I happen to be on a policy committee, and the policy committee has a policy title 1015, Board Secretary. And this is part of the responsibility of the policy committee to review this action and put it in our policy manual before a general manager would go ahead and override our capabilities as a policy committee. And it does sort of dovetail what he's requesting. And it is set up for the board of directors' activities and not the general manager's use. So I recommend this be tabled and sent back to the policy committee prior to approving this action. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gordon. If you would lower your hand, please, I would appreciate that. Thank you. Director Howell, since you're the chair of the policy committee, would you like to comment on your vice chair's comment?
Actually, no. I had something else in my mind on that one. The issue of the charge of the policy committee and what it's what it should and shouldn't be doing is really is still something that is being worked through, and we have a recently new set of bylaws in this regard. So I prefer not to go there at this point. I did want to just mention, however, to respond to some members of the public. I have to tell you that to have any employee answer to five different people is an absolute disaster. No business that makes it in this world is going to have that kind of an organization. And believe me, I've been in that position, and I can tell you it will not come to a good end, because the person in the position will have no way of deciding which of the board members' requests to prioritize. It's a serious problem. And we hire the general manager to run the district. We do not run the district. And I remind the public of this. We don't run the district. If you wanted me to go out and try to figure out what to do with the sewers that are broken, I'm afraid you'd have a lot of trouble flushing your toilet for quite some period of time. So we have to remember what our roles are. So I just wanted to respond to that. So I'm actually very much in favor of this. And I did want to make just a very brief comment. Forgive me, I didn't start my timer, so I'm trying not to go too long. Of course, now I managed to lose the train. Just a moment. Damn. Whatever it was, it probably wasn't that important. So I'll leave it at that for the time being.
All right. Thank you, Don. And not to worry about not remembering something, especially these days. Vice President Steidel and then Director Rice.
Thank you, President Farmer. I certainly appreciate Mr. Heinrich's comments that he made in his desire for the board to table something on behalf of the expectation of the policy committee. But I will remind all that the committees are advisory committees to the board. And the authority for the committees and the work that they do and the decisions made are the purview of the board. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Vice President Steidel. Director Rice?
And I just wanted to add that the comments that have already been made about the GM is the only one who works for five people. Mr. Carmel also works for five people, and they make the big bucks. If you notice, this salary is not the same as Mr. Weigold's. Mr. Weigold gets the big bucks. Mr. Carmel gets the big bucks because they do have five bosses. And I will leave the issue raised from the policy committee alone, because the chair, I think, has a handle on it.
All right. Thank you, Director Rice. I would hope that the people that make the big bucks, it's not just because they answer to five people, but they do other things as well. But thank you. Thank you for highlighting that. Director Howell, you wish to make one more comment before we take a vote on this item?
Oh, yes, thank you. I just remembered the last thing I wanted to say. The concern about facilitate and ensure. I actually like that phrasing, because facilitate means to make things easier, and to ensure means to keep track.
Validate.
So this is what we need, is somebody to keep track of what's needed and make it easier for us to do what we need to do in order to fulfill our jobs. And that goes for not only us, but also staff as well. So I think it's well put together, and I will definitely vote in favor of this.
All right, and on that affirming note, Haley, I believe we already have a motion and a second. So if you could call the roll, please.
Sure. Director Pearson?
Aye.
Director Rice?
Aye.
Director Howe?
Aye.
Vice President Seidel?
Aye.
President Farmer?
Aye. All right, let's move on to item six and the manager's report, and 6A, our general manager, Mr. Weigold.
Thank you, President Farmer. Well, first of all, I know Haley's got a big smile on her face after that vote, so thank you very much.
Very much so. Thank you.
Because she's going to have a major part of her load unloaded to get into other things that I'm going to load up on her. But it's all good for us. Thank you very much again. No change from a service standpoint in the district. Still meeting our missions of providing water, wastewater, emergency response facilities, and administrative services. I listed a number of the meetings I attended this past month. Major projects that I've been involved with together with the staff are the PG&E IGA, as we're moving through, and you'll hear from each of the managers in more detail on some of these projects, but the IGA, we're moving into, we have moved into decision-making on how we're going to fund the projects that we want to move forward with. On the CIP, we are developing a broader capital improvements project list, which in the coming year, my plan is to move us into long-range financial planning, something we haven't done before here. CDP was brought up before. That 13% I think there's some misunderstanding on that. It's not that our application is only 13% complete. Our application was 100% complete, but the county lists how far along the process we are. We're 13% of the way through the process. It's not, again, that we submitted an application that's 13% complete. So the county has their own little schedule of who it has to go through, what departments, and that's their internal tracking mechanism. But we'll have a little bit more update on both the CDP progress and what's happening with the county planning, as well as our continued coordination with the Coastal Commission, which is ongoing. I will reiterate again what I've said in the past over the past several months. This CDP process is a long process. It requires a number of studies. We'll be informed by a number of projects that are ongoing, including the Urban Water Management Plan that's not due until next summer. So in everybody's mind, please set in your mind that this is some project that we hope to get done sometime middle end of next year, maybe. COVID is slowing things down like you can't imagine right now. Everything we do is hard. No one is very few people are at their offices. They're working from home. They don't have resources always available to them. There's technical glitches in some of the people we work with at regulatory agencies that they have to access records from remote locations. So it's really slowed things down. And we are doing a few other things on our own here, like the IGA, of course. But we are moving out at a good clip, in my opinion. We're also doing a lot of work. I'm doing a lot of work with skate park now and restroom planning. We are going to be putting together design RFPs for both of those projects. Of course, we have to be in compliance legally when we put those out. And we also are on a timeline to try to reach grant application milestones. So we've got a lot of work across multiple departments there. And of course, while I'm not day-to-day involved like Pam is, we're wrapping up our second to last audit that'll bring us into compliance from years of backlog there. And we're installing our Tyler financial system, which is still ongoing and will be ongoing probably through most of the year next year. That's going to facilitate the staff ability to more efficiently operate, not only within the finance department, but across the entire district complex. It's going to help with financial planning, analysis, really be super helpful for us to understand how we're doing on an ongoing real-time basis. Instead of looking backwards a quarter to see what we did, we will be able to look forward. A couple of other things, as I mentioned, board secretary recruitment has basically completed. I think I covered it a little bit last week, but the homeless encampment issue is exploding across the county and across the state. The county is due to wrap up its new policy and procedures by the end of the month, and we hope to be informed and take a look at that and see how that runs alongside our own current policy and procedures. We're taking advantage of the slowdown to do a good deal of maintenance at the Veterans Hall, since we don't have groups of organizations coming and going there. That concludes my report, pending your questions.
All right. Thank you, General Manager Weigold. I'm not seeing anyone on the board that has any questions or concerns, but I do see that a member of the public has their hand up. So why don't we go to that comment? Haley?
Sure. Christine Heinrichs would like to speak. Christine, go ahead and unmute yourself.
Thank you. Just to bring you up to date on the Satimi permit application for new construction, which was approved by staff, the Coastal Commission unanimously accepted the staff report, finding significant issue with the permit without further comment. The de novo hearing has been postponed at the request of the applicant. I ask the board again to direct the general manager to stop approving these permit applications, which are against the law and public policy. The district's approval then requires action at the level of the Coastal Commission to deny the permits, and the Coastal Commission has repeatedly told the district that these permits are not legal and will be denied. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Heinrich. General Manager Weigel, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but did you wish to respond to Ms. Heinrich's comment?
Not particularly.
Okay. Sorry, maybe I shouldn't have allowed you to, well, never mind, moving on. So I don't see any comments from members of the board on General Manager Weigold's report. So we can move forward to Ms. Duffield and the Finance Manager's report.
Good afternoon, President Farmer, members of the board. So I just want to point out a new item that I put into the Finance Manager report, which is on page 45. It's the second paragraph, and it's just a little update about where we are on the FEMA reimbursement. So we have submitted our costs that we think should be eligible. And now it's basically in FEMA's court to determine if those costs are eligible. So they've been submitting questions back and forth to me. I had some questions this past Tuesday. So right now the dialogue is continuing and we don't have an official verdict yet on what is going to be considered eligible and what isn't going to be eligible. So as we have that information, hopefully we'll know by the first November meeting, we can communicate that to the board and the public. The next item is the financial system update. So we're continuing meetings. Director Howell is usually involved in every one of those meetings. We're still continuing to meet with Tyler every other Wednesday. And Tyler is working on an implementation schedule for implementing the financials, which would happen first. The financials would include accounts payable, payroll, the general ledger, timekeeping, all of those kinds of things. And our estimated go-live date to that as it stands now, which is still subject to a lot of layers of approval, would be sometime in March to April of 2021. And within a month to a month and a half following that, we would go live with billing. So it would be like the March, April, I think is like the target billing date that we're kind of looking forward right now. So we still have to get that data poll, which if you remember, we had to cancel during the last billing cycle because of the power outages and fires. So we're really hoping to proceed with that November 5th and 6th, the next time we're going to be right in the middle of our utility billing. So we're hopeful that that will happen, and then we can really start moving forward with the implementation process. As far as the audit goes, the auditors have been out here for 5 separate days, and they did all of their testing of the financial records that they wanted to see, you know, in print, that they want to look at and touch themselves. So the next step in that process is we are reviewing every one of the general ledger accounts, and we're having conversations and dialogue back and forth with, you know, what change in that account happened, why, and are those changes reasonable? Is there any more detail that they have to look at account by account? And as you can imagine, we have a lot of accounts. They duplicate with every fund. So they're looking at not just your revenue and expense accounts, but they're looking at every account in our books. So that's quite a process. I assume that process will continue for about another 2 weeks. And then once all the questions have been answered, that is when the auditors will begin formulating the financial statements. They'll start putting together like their work papers and creating the financial statements. So, you know, I'll just keep updating you on that as we have more information. So that's about all I have to report, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Well, we do have 2 board members that have their hands up, and I believe Director Pearson is concerned about the audit. So why don't I go to you first, Director Pearson, then to Director Rice.
Actually, my question is not about the audit, but thank you, President Farmer. when I was in the business world, we had to comply with Sarbanes-Oxley, and thank God you guys don't. But at the same time, I think there needs to be some checks and balances on people purchasing things. Does the Tyler Encode software enable that so that before a purchase order is issued, a manager of some kind has to approve that at some level, $100, $500, or whatever you put in there?
Correct. The Tyler system. So if you think how our system works now is, we don't have an electronic system for purchasing. It's a piece of paper that is prepared and approved a lot of times after the purchase has already been made. So, you know, we have what we call blanket purchase orders or annual purchase orders, and we have a list of vendors established, pre-established for the year that any of our staff can go to. And then we also have like one-time purchase orders for new vendors that, you know, we need to obtain a product or service from. So our system is not, we don't have an integrated purchasing system right now, but going forward in Tyler, we will. So part of what I have been working on in the background of the Tyler implementation is every employee and what their authority is in the different modules. You know, what do they need in timekeeping? Are they just an employee and don't supervise anybody? Do they need a supervisory layer? You know, kind of things. The same holds true with, you know, purchasing. What is their limit? Who has to approve the purchase? And then we set it up from the beginning and it goes through like a series of approvers. So it could go from the employee requesting it, it forwards automatically through the approval process that's predetermined to the supervisor, then to the department manager, to the general manager if needed, depending on the thresholds that we put into the system. So the short answer to the long answer is yes, we will have approval layers in there.
Wonderful. Thank you. And I'm sure Director Howe will be all over that and helping you out.
Yes.
Checks and balances.
Yeah.
I just want to say before I go to Director Rice, once again, Ms. Duffield, I want to commend you. It seems as if any time there's a question posed to you that needs a greater amount of information than any of us could provide, you're right there without even you just give us the complete answer as thoroughly as possible, and it's always much appreciated. Thank you so much. You bet. Director Rice.
So two observations and then pointing you guys in a direction. Hopefully the audit will be the responsibility of whoever is on the new board. I am tired of looking at those audits. I'm glad we do them, but it's not the easiest task to try and review it because it's an important responsibility. Second is, it sounds like until we get Tyler implemented, we are probably going to be a little bit overworked still among our admin staff. But once it's implemented, so it sounds like there's going to be some reduction of workload just based on the fact that we're not working in a DOS program anymore. And the last thing is kind of hooks in with Ms. Duffield, but also something Mr. Weigold said. In 2007, Black & Veatch, which is a international water consulting firm, did a financial study, including capital improvements and such. It was 2007 that was done. Obviously, clearly out of date at this point, but it might provide a resource for you to at least look at what we've done in the past, if that's helpful.
All right, thank you, Director Rice. Seeing no more comments from the board or the public, let's move on to item 4C and the utilities report. And Mr. D'Enzo, there you are in real time. So go right ahead, Ray, and good afternoon.
Good afternoon, President Farmer. Thank you again for allowing me to present the utilities report for activities for the months of September. A couple of things I wanted to include in the utilities report to answer a couple of questions earlier. Regarding the fire hydrant maintenance, there are 368 fire hydrants in our system. And so far, we've completed 75% of the maintenance of that. That's roughly about 280. And of that 280 that has been worked on this past year, two of them needed to be replaced. And this is something that we are continuing to work through. And once we're completed, we're going to do it again. It's intended to be a cycle, like every year that we're needing to do that. So I just wanted to let you know to answer that question and to really to shine a light on the good work that our water department is doing, because you already know a lot of the work that they do on top of that. And this doesn't really get mentioned. The other thing too, I'll touch on a couple of things regarding the CDP before I move on. Regarding the response that we need to do within the 90-day period for that information hold, we are going to be responding. I believe it's in mid-November that we need to give our response. And we'll respond and touch upon all the things that we can respond to. Obviously, there's some things with, say, the in-stream flow study that still needs to be done, but I'll talk about that in a second. And regarding the 13% of the process, it sounds like your staff has not done a good job on this or did it something incomplete, but really the 13% is about process. It's not about application completeness. So I wanted to make that clear, because even if we submitted an application with zero information, it would still be 13% of the process. So I just wanted to make that clear. And regarding the in-stream flow study, so we've completed the draft. We submitted it to Coastal Commission, amongst other people. And Coastal Commission responded back to us with some responses. We had agreement on a few of the items, but there was still some points that needed to be worked through. So we're going to form again, a response and hopefully come up with some kind of a compromise. And I do want to be clear. I know I said that we were hoping to get, you know, more progress on this done, you know, as I said, you know, a few months ago. But I also wanted to make it clear that the interest of the board, the in-stream flow study, I intended to be a useful item, not just a check box for the district. I want it to be something useful because there's complex issues here that quite frankly have dated back over 20 years. So I don't want to work through that and just come up with something and say, I checked the box, boom, we got an in-stream flow study. Everyone has to have some kind of agreement, and there does need to be some give and take and hopefully a compromise. So I wanted to make it clear on that. So we are, but I do want to say we are making progress on that. We have agreement on a few of the points. There's just a couple of things that we need to work through. So, but I can give a more complete report should you ask for one in the future. So now to the meat of the utilities report. So a lot of activities were done in the wastewater treatment plant. We're moving forward with our the PG&E SST projects. The design has been completed for the electrical upgrades. RFP has gone out, and actually, just jumping ahead a little bit, we had a good job walkthrough yesterday, where the contractors that want to bid on the job were able to see the things that needed to be done, and good questions were asked. So by the time I give the report next month, we should be more clear as to what the costs are going to be for that electrical upgrade. For the other portions of the SST, the 30% design is for the other projects are anticipated to be completed by the end of the month. So again, hopefully by next report, I'll be able to give a little bit more complete answers relating to that, and hopefully with good prices for the engineering estimates. Another thing I wanted to let you all know about, as mentioned in the report, we're doing a lot of good work in the collection system. I do want to highlight that our staff in the collection system is doing really well. They're tackling this, and they're taking ownership. And because of that, they're finding a lot of interesting things in our sewer system. As you can see in Figure 1, and there was they found a 4x4 piece of lumber that was in one of our collection system sewer mains. We don't know how these things get in there, but it is a common thing, unfortunately, that these get in there, and that's why maintenance needs to be done. Other things that we are seeing too are root balls are a common thing that we encounter in these as we go through the maintenance of these collection system pipes. But I just wanted we're pleased that we're doing a lot of work, but we are finding a lot of interesting things, but the staff is fixing them. On to the water department. So a few things I want to highlight. We're continuing with the hydrant flushing, as I mentioned, and we're also continuing with our valve exercising program throughout our system. This month, we also did a lot of road routine system-wide road repair. And what this means is that when we fix leaks within our system, we have to cut in through the asphalt, but we don't have the capability of doing hot mix, because that would be an inefficient and cost ineffective way of doing it. So what we do is we do cold mix, and then later on the road contractor comes in and then does all of these overlays, the hot mix in batches. So that's what it was talking about. So total of 23 cold patches were completed last month. Again, really good work there. Also want to make mention too, the weed abatement was done through many facilities and resources. kind of partnered with us, you know, to help take care of some of those things that that we needed to take care of, you know, right around in our many facilities. So and with that, they use some of the mulch to help beautify some of our areas here right around the treatment plant. Again, the name of the game is proactive measures. And so one of the things we also did in September is we did some line replacements on Sheffield Street. And what this was is a proactive measure because we wanted to fix some troublesome areas that we know exist instead of having to find out, you know, in an inopportune time. So a lot of that work was being done by the water staff. And I wanted to also take the time to, I have this new feature in my utilities report called Operations Tech Talk Topic. So this week, I wanted to address Santa Rosa Wells because questions in the past have been asked about this, about their Santa Rosa Wells. But in general, we have two well systems that we get water production from. The San Simeon well field is one, which is our main well field that we get most of our water from, and also the Santa Rosa wells. And so I want to focus on that. There are two main wells in our Santa Rosa well that's used for the distribution system. There's Santa Rosa 4, which is over by the high school, and Santa Rosa 3, which is closer to the creek, kind of near the Tent City area. That's where the well is actually located. Most of the water from, first of all, we only use the Santa Rosa wells when we want to give San Simeon a break. We want to get most of our water production from the San Simeon well field. But within the Santa Rosa system, Santa Rosa 4 is the main well that we get our water because the quality is consistent. It doesn't need too much treatment in order for the water to be used in the distribution system. So Santa Rosa well 4 is what we use. The well in question is Santa Rosa 3. And questions about this have come up in the past because of its proximity to the creek, there's a lot of water quality issues with Santa Rosa 3. So we don't use it as much. Rarely at all. This month we didn't use it, and typically we don't use it during the periods of December to April. But even though we don't use it, we still have to do maintenance every month because there's a filtration system that needs to be backwashed and maintained to be sure that it doesn't gunk up. All right, even though it doesn't get used into the system, and doing these maintenance. The quality is not going to be good. So when we do the flushing of Santa Rosa Well 3, we don't allow that water to go into the distribution system. And instead, we have it go to typically the wastewater. We plumb it to the wastewater, and then it gets treated at a wastewater treatment plant. So that's, in essence, what the main functions. So San Simeon wells are the main wells for our well production, but Santa Rosa 3 is kind of like our backup, and it helps to when we want to give San Simeon a break, and it's really good. It's an operational choice that we make, and within SR4 and SR3, SR4 is the main well of use because SR3 there's water quality issues that we need to. We need to like pay attention more closely to before allowing that water to enter into our distribution system. So that's a summary of the operations of the Santa Rosa wells. As far as the versions are concerned, most of the production up until this point has been from San Simeon. About 77% of our production is from San Simeon. And as far as well levels are concerned, we're trending slightly above average, actually, you know, pretty big, pretty above average. And of course, that's available on the website, but I did attach the charts in your packet there for you. Moving on now to the sustainable water facility, our staff is preparing for the winter months, for the winter wet weather period. So we're taking the time to do some maintenance that we can, like we're doing some maintenance on the AC units, and we're also doing some maintenance on some corrosion issues that we've seen on the roof. So we're doing some coatings in the months of September that we've done some of that maintenance during that time in the SWF. And relating to conservation and permits, I want to highlight the water loss audit report that we submitted that was supposed to be submitted in October, but we submitted it in September. As you can see in my write-up in there, just to summarize, there was we scored a validity score of 62. The California average is 60, and it's actually, we went up a couple of points from last year. Some of the metrics that of note was the real losses, which was 8.59 gallons per connection per day. And the apparent losses were 1.63 gallons per connection per day. Those are actually pretty good metrics. The real losses means, it doesn't mean that 8.59 gallons were lost by each connection. It just means over when we report leaks, it's a summation and it's divided amongst all the connections is how that's calculated. For the Western United States, that number is typically around 43 gallons per connection per day, but we're at 8.59 gallons per connection per day. So we're pretty happy with that. And we're actually doing more that we can so that we can increase our score. Some of the meter upgrades that we're anticipating by the end of this year and next year, that's gonna improve our score. And also when we do any upgrades to our SCADA system, that will also improve our score. But in the meanwhile, I think we're doing well. So I want to give kudos to our staff for getting that done. And also I do want to announce we did hire an admin tech 2. Her name is Megan Gersony, and she's going to start Monday. We're glad to have her, but I'll tell you more about her in next month's report. But we did hire a new admin tech too, so we're glad to have her join us next week. As you can see, there's some reports there. We've done some coordination with the funding ad hoc committee regarding funding for the PG&E projects. We're hoping to move that forward. We're going to be having a meeting with them again next week, and we'll be giving a more report next month because we should be getting a more solid figures for the costs. So I just wanted to make mention on that. And as you can see, there's reports in the assignments, full serves, retrofit verifications, and also the regulatory reports that we submitted. And I'm proud to say no violations were reported during the month when we submitted. And that, I believe, is my report for now. And I'm, of course, available for any questions.
Well, thank you, Ray, for that very, very thorough report. I also want to comment on the fact that you know, including the well levels in your monthly report is very helpful to the public as well as us board members. And I think it says a lot about the members of the public. And that even though we had a less than normal rainfall, the well levels are still above average, which I'm going to assume as much as anything reflects on the conservation efforts being made by the members of the community. So thank you so much there. Director Rice, I see that you have your hand up, but if you don't mind, actually there's three members of the board that wish to comment. I hope nobody minds, but our expert in the public with regard to water has had her hand up for quite a while. So Haley, could you go to public comment right now, please?
Sure. The first member of the public that wishes to speak is Elizabeth Benhausen. Elizabeth, go ahead and unmute yourself.
Thank you very much, Ms. Dodson and President Farmer. I am expert in the water, only having watched the dolphins in it this morning and the surfers, and it was a wonderful essential of our habitat. But I want to thank Utilities Manager D'Enzo for commenting in print here about SR3. It's basically the material that was sent to me back in July. I still have significant questions about this issue, but I will not pose them to you now. I will pose them to you further in writing. I'm looking at the history of SR3 and SR1 under a previous administration and what the costs were. And I'm looking also at projected updates that have been made over the past 3 years that have not been addressed. So I think there's a major issue here that has to do not only with the general word quality of water, but there's another issue about planning water supply in this community. That's a bigger question than simply SR3. But as you recall, SR3 went offline thanks to Chevron a couple of decades ago. And it's always posing key issues to us, no matter for what causes. So I will send this to you, board and administration, including you, General Manager Weigold. I expect to have it perhaps in a couple of weeks, this analysis of SR3 and what I'm posing. And I want to make clear, friends, I just don't do this for my mental health. I really do believe that the more of us in the community who look carefully at issues before us in water demand and water supply, as well as the rest, the better off the whole community will be. And I urge community members to engage in the ecstasy of making public comments at the board meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bettenhausen. With that final comment there, could we go to the second public comment, Haley, and then bring it back to the board, please?
Yes, the next member of the public that wishes to speak is Karen Dean. Karen, go ahead and unmute yourself.
Hi, I'm not going to get into technicalities as much as Elizabeth did, but thank you, Mr. D'Enzo, for your thorough report. I have noticed the Vactor truck going around town working on the sewer lines, making really good use of that purchase. I've also noticed the Vactor truck filling up the tank from the fire hydrants. Now, I realize that the water department is in charge of exercising the fire hydrants, but can we combine the two things together and have the Vactor truck fill up from the hydrants that need exercising? Is that an option? We can kill two birds with one stone. Also, in listening to you with them flushing SR3, can that water be used in the Vactor truck? I just think it makes sense to make use of the water from both the fire hydrant exercising and from flushing SR3 in the Vactor truck to save us the use of potable water. That's it. Thank you.
Ray, did you wish to comment on Ms. Dean's concerns there?
Oh, yes, we do use, whenever we do flush the hydrants, we do use the water in the Vactor truck as much as possible. Obviously, the timing, as much as we can, we'll do better on that. But for now, it's a matter of timing too. So, yeah. But we try when we can.
All right. Thank you, Ray. So we have three members of the board that have their hands up. So Director Rice, let's go to you first, and then Vice President Steidel and Director Howell.
Mr. D'Enzo, I don't know if the water loss report, some of the items that you're looking at in the future include parsing the difference between commercial and residential losses, maybe to try and address issues with meters or something, and I don't need an answer today. I don't know if that's part of the studies that they do. And the second question is actually partially for the GM, but also for you. I heard on NPR this morning that the state of California is finally contacting water agencies to find out how they're doing financially because of the COVID and the restrictions about turning people's water service off and non-payment because of the COVID situation. So I didn't know if we had received a request for information on that, because it sounds like the state is trying to figure out which water agencies are going to be kind of, no pun intended, underwater when this stuff, when they do their numbers later on this year. So those are my two comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Rice. Vice President Steidel. You need to unmute yourself, please.
Thank you. My comments our observations certainly aren't as technical as a couple of the others that have already gone forward, but I just wanted to say that experienced the Vactor truck being down in the Marine Terrace area a lot lately. And I actually stopped and talked to the staff that was operating the truck and said, you know, geez, guys, did you run across an issue, or is, you know, are you just doing some look-sees? And they said, oh, no, we're doing the maintenance activities that we've been wanting to do forever and that we just haven't been able to do in the way we wanted to. And they, to them, that truck is like a glowing gold light. It's just, it's something that they really feel is contributing to their job and their success. And I was so pleased to see that and get that kind of feedback from them. And it engendered some conversation in the neighborhood too, because of course, I mean, it's not a small piece of equipment. So to see it cruising the streets kind of got people asking questions and getting interested. And I thought there was a lot of value to that. And Ray, I just wanted to say how much I appreciated that tech talk topic approach. I think that it's very valuable. I certainly learned a lot from it. And I think that the opportunities for being able to kind of embed that kind of information in your utilities report is probably a really valuable tool for the district and for the directors also. So thank you for that. And thank you for taking the steps to do that. And this one is just, it may sound ridiculous, but there was a picture on page 47, and it directed the identification of F&R staff in the orange jackets and water in the blue. And it just never occurred to me to recognize that different areas of the district and the different types of jobs that they do are actually wearing different kinds of jackets. And by theory, you would be able to be any place and see the color of jacket of the employee that's working and know what area of the district is supporting or doing the activity. And I thought that was, it was just an observation. I thought, oh geez, I can't believe I didn't realize that before, but just a fun fact. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice President Steidel. And before we move on to Director Hall, I just want to make the comment with regard to the new Vactor truck that we can truly and totally thank Wastewater Supervisor John Alchin, who somehow found this gold mine at a very reasonable price, a brand new Vactor truck, which we were so much in need of. And he found one that was less expensive than the one he was going to purchase. And so hats off to John. Director Howell.
Oh, thank you. Very briefly, I just wanted to add my voice. I really, really liked the tech topics, and please do continue with that. I look forward to your next one. So thank you for that. Very good.
All right. Thank you, everyone. And thank you, Ray, for your report. Look forward to hearing from you next month as well. All right, let's move on to item number 7, board member committee and liaison reports. And before we start this, Haley, if you don't mind, I've scrolled through my mail and can't find our Zoom link to closed session. I don't know what happened to it. So if you could send that to my mailbox, please, much appreciated.
Yes, we'll do.
Thank you. So moving on to, like I say, I prefer to do the president's report at the end. So if we could move on to 7B and the finance committee report, and Vice President Seidel.
Yes, the finance committee will be meeting next. In 2 weeks, on the 27th. And at that point, we'll be receiving the first quarter budget report from our finance manager, Ms. Duffield. And there is an ad hoc committee also of finance that participates with the research and infrastructure committee ad hoc, taking a look into the options for obtaining the financing and moving forward with the IGA. So we will be getting a status report back from them during that meeting also. But the way with the timing of these meetings go now, it seems like our finance committee report is always just ahead of us in terms of the reports that are being made. So that's all that I have to offer for right now.
Thank you, Vice President Steidel. Director Howell, how about you with regard to the policy committee report?
Thank you. This will be a bit abbreviated. I'll just speak about some of the things that are either we're beginning to do or we're finishing up. I expected our meeting Thursday of this week from 2 weeks from today. We will have our next meeting. And at that point, I fully anticipate that we'll finish up with the a suggested policy for filling a vacancy on the board of directors. Basically, we took what we heard from everybody here, and hopefully we will come back with something that I hope that you will like, including a step-by-step procedure. One doesn't know until somebody else looks at it how clear it's going to be, but... Anyway, I do, so I'm going to ask that be put on next on our agenda for our first meeting next month, because I'm quite sure it'll be ready by then. The other areas, we're commencing work on the purchasing policy. We're just beginning to start that, so I've begun setting up meetings with Mr. Weigold, and I'll be talking to Pam and eventually getting committee members involved in that. The other area, which we're still researching, but hope to be able to discuss and consider in our December meeting, will be things relative to the email management, email retention. It seems that the deeper, I've been doing most of the research, and before I can engage committee members, there are certain basic things that need to be determined and documentation, and I keep finding more stuff. It's like turning over a rock and finding all these interesting things underneath it. It's turning out to be a very, it's a difficult issue, and it seems to be changing constantly as other legislation comes forth. So this may be a moving target, but we'll make an attempt at it in any case. Those are the main issues that we're dealing with right now. I don't have much more to tell you at this point, but I'm certainly open to questions.
All right. Thank you, Director Rice. Director Howell. I think Director Rice wishes to either ask you a question or make a comment.
Thank you, President Farmer. as you're looking at the purchasing policy, I know the current, put together policy doesn't really have an angle to speak to reducing our carbon footprint or anything like that. It would be nice if we had something along that lines, if that makes sense within it. I know that we do give a nod. People who are local contractors bidding on something get a break. Like, they can charge 10% more because they're local, kind of deal. That's not really the best way to phrase it, but I think everybody understands what I mean. If you are a local contractor, you don't have to be the lowest bid necessarily. But I would like to see something about, reducing our carbon footprint by way of what we buy without getting too much in the weeds. And then the other thing I wanted to let you know is I've been listening to a lot of old meetings, and please pass along to the policy committee that almost every single time there's been an appointment to a vacancy of this board, the discussion goes much, much longer than anyone expected. It becomes much more difficult than anyone thought it was going to be. The most recent one I listened to was when Merle Clift was appointed in March of 2008. So if your committee wants to know that it's not just more recent boards that have struggled with this here, there you go.
May I respond, Mr. President? Oh, thanks. Thank you. Thank you, Director Rice. So two things. We'll see what the committee thinks about the carbon footprint. It's certainly appropriate in a purchasing policy. It's at the high level, and it's basically stating what the board's intentions are in that area. So it would certainly be something that the board could discuss. So we'll see if the committee, I think they'll probably like your idea, but I don't want to speak for them. I usually try to be quiet on that regard.
Well, and if I might just speak to that, Director Howell, if I'm the only one on the board and you're the other person on the board, if we don't have three people on the board that want to see that angle added in, it probably we shouldn't be having them do the work.
Well, that's another way to go. Maybe we should have a motion at some point if that is something this board would like them to consider. It can go either way on that one, but yeah, I kind of jumped in, I think, out of turn. Forgive me there, Director.
I didn't see that happen at all, Don, so thank you. Vice President Steidel.
The only thing that I would add as an observation on the idea of a carbon footprint, which I agree, I think is wonderful, is that I think that the idea of that needs to be elevated beyond the idea of a single policy. And what we're talking about is a strategic planning item for the board to be targeting itself towards to make the decision on how it wants to approach that and if they want to associate any particular, you know, targets in that direction and to identify areas in which those targets can be satisfied. I think if we start embedding these kinds of things into policies without having it be a structure that's a strategy element at the board level, I think we're going to really wind ourselves around the axle.
If I might, President Farmer, just to follow up, I do agree with that take on it. I think a more accurate idea, way to say what I'm kind of thinking is, where possible, let's buy recycled. Where possible, let's hire people that are being smart about environmental issues. That's kind of more what I meant than necessarily. But you make a point with quantifiability. That is an important factor with anything if we're going to change a policy. So thank you for that input.
All right. Thank you both for your comments about shifting our consciousness to where we're actually living more in harmony with nature. And let me just leave it at that. Director Howell, you wish to say something else?
Well, I saw Mr. Carmel's hand going up, and I thought, hey, maybe we better hear what he has to say.
I'm sorry, I didn't see your physical hand go up, Tim, so go right ahead.
I was just concerned we were way off topic. This is a committee report, and we were deliberating on a policy, and you really can't do that under the Brown Act. So let's try to be careful in the future.
Thank you, Mr. Carmel.
Thank you. Thank you, Tim. As someone said earlier, that is why we pay you the big bucks. Thank you. So moving on to the report from Resources and Infrastructure Committee and Director Pearson.
Thank you, President Farmer. I will be brief. First, I would like to report that during our meeting, Mr. D'Enzo gave us the good news that Lift Station B1, under the new structure that they're doing, is going to be eliminated. They did find that they have enough elevation to go ahead and just add that to gravity feed. which is outstanding. Now that'll have to take place during the work done by PG&E because there is some some piping that needs to be redone, but we get rid of that cost of electricity forever, and we get rid of that station, which is right there next to the creek. So well done, Mr. D'Enzo, well done on that one. Second, we formed an ad hoc committee to look at asset management, and they will be working with staff to look at that item and getting a intern probably to help out with collection of data. We did a CIP review and basically returned it to staff to have it updated more and done better. And Mr. D'Enzo gave us a brief update on the progress of the urban water management plan. And that is going along smoothly, he said. And sometime after the first of the year, he will be getting a report to the full board here on exactly, you know, how far they've gotten, et cetera, et cetera. But they're making good progress, he said. So that's my report. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Pearson. Director Rice, did you wish to make a comment on what we just heard?
I have a procedural question for Mr. Carmel. I can wait till we're done with the reports, though.
All right, thank you. So liaison reports, ad hoc committee reports. So do we have anything on the ad hoc retrofit committee? Do we have any report there?
Yeah, the only report that I have is that we will have a final report in November and be finished with that one.
All right, thank you. I know I have written down here Tyler Encode, but I think we had a fairly complete discussion earlier with Ms. Duffield and some comments from Director Howell as well. So moving on to liaison reports, I don't think the NCAC has met yet. Director Pearson, did you wish to comment on the Fire Safe Focus Group?
Not really. The chief covered a bunch of our area during his report, and there was nothing really new. We are going to establish a date for the Wildfire Preparedness Day next May in hopes that we will be able to hold that thing. So other than that, no report. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. I don't believe there are any other liaison reports available at this time, so I'll just go ahead and do my two and then the president's report, if nobody minds. So first off, the Francis Fiscalini Ranch Preserve met a week ago yesterday, October 8th. Their office has been closed down there on Main Street by Sandy's Deli for a number of months due to COVID-19. And it has recently opened up, and that's always a good thing. So locally, as well as folks visiting, can find out more about the ranch, which is probably one of the more popular draws to this community for people just to visit. Good news with regard to financially what's happening with FFRP. Donations are up over 50% from 2019. Memberships are up about 14%. Merchandise sales are way up, and there's still plenty of items available if you wish to purchase something from their website for holiday gifts. Executive Director Kitty Connolly recently attended a University of California workshop on forest management, as well as developing a forest stewardship plan. So we'll probably have more to hear from her next month. Almost an hour was spent debating the investment policy of FFRP with regard to their investments in the stock market, who to invest with and when, and how secure is the stock market. So we can only understand why that took a long time. There was also a brief discussion as to property encroachments from Huntington Drive onto the ranch that, of course, the district owns. Finally, FFRP is going to have their 20th anniversary celebration. Unfortunately, it's not going to be, you know, anything in person, like behind, I can't remember where it is right now, there on Main Street, where we've had it in the past, and it's always been an enjoyable event. So it's going to be online. And this it's on Saturday, November 7th at 4 p.m. It's going to take probably a little under 2 hours to perhaps 2 hours. Musical guests are going to include world-class violinist and local resident Bryn Albanese, Slow County legend singer-songwriter Jill Knight, who once lived here and still lives close to what she calls home, as well as local bagpiper Neil Dundas. Interviews are going to include the history of the ranch, the saving of the ranch, the value of the ranch, past, present, and future. The fundraising goal for this particular event is $10,000. Tickets and door prizes. So door prizes are going to be available to generate donations. Of course, there's tickets. You can make an online donation at the FFRP website or get a ticket at FiscaliniRanchPreserve.org. With regard to the Forest Committee meeting that took place last night, early on there was a discussion regarding the proliferation of gall rust and dwarf mistletoe and other diseases that are currently infecting the Monterey pine forest. This has been something that's ongoing for years. It's not surprising that it's once again a dilemma, but just to bring that to the consciousness of the board and the public. There's concern as to how to educate the public on this matter because we're unable to do a public presentation. There are a number of experts out there that we could hire to do in a Zoom meeting, but it might not be, let's say, as helpful or as productive as having something in person over at the Mechanics Bank community room. There was also a very thorough discussion with regard to the website, Sustainable Defensible Space, Eco-Appropriate Homescaping for Wildlife Resilience. And so basically this is an approach to how to best deal with what happens at the home so you're less impacted by, heaven forbid, a wildfire. So what was discussed is, you start, most people think, well, if I just do the 30 feet of defensible or 100 feet of defensible space around my home, that's the best thing to do. Actually, the best thing to do is to start from the house and go outward, including, and we've discussed this in the past, ember-proofing the roof as well as siding and gutters. Aggressively cutting down trees and vegetation doesn't necessarily make one safer. That's one of the things that was pointed out at this website. There's also a list of the CAL FIRE list of 10 low-cost ways to harden your home with regard to, once again, making it less prone to damage. Let me just mention, this is called Sustainable Defensible Space Eco-Appropriate Homescaping for Wildfire Resilience. And I would hope that many people connect with this website, and the website is defensiblespace.org. That's defensiblespace.org. One more item that I wish to mention from last night's meeting. CAL FIRE has hired a professional forest manager and a Cal Poly graduate, Steve Otten. He's going to be doing an equivalent EIR on the Covell Ranch. That's likely going to be ready in about 2 or 3 months. And whatever findings he has might be able to apply to all of the forested areas of Cambria. So we look forward to that. With regard to my president's report, first, I do want to mention we haven't had an update lately on the number of COVID-19 cases here in the county, you know, across the nation. But I think what's important, while these numbers continue to go up, what's been happening most recently in Cambria is what we would be probably most concerned about. So a couple of months, we had a quick jump in the number of total cases here in our community from 11 to 23 and then to the low 30s. And like I said, this took place in a relatively brief period of time. As I've stated, many of the areas in the county, of course, as well as other North Coast communities, have seen their numbers jump during this period of time, some of them doubling along the North Coast, whereas here in Cambria, the number has been presently at 36 for quite a while. So even with the usual tourist population visiting our town, the number has remained relatively steady. So I want to say hats off to the residents of Cambria for our responsible behavior, being thoughtful of others during these unsettled times. And this really helps us to really even more appreciate the community that we live in. I also want to mention something, and maybe this isn't applicable, but then again, we all know that COVID-19 is going on out there. Sometimes it kind of drops off our radar screen. So I just want to discuss something, a conversation I had with a friend of mine just a couple of days ago. He recently lost his younger sister to COVID-19. And what happened was their grandchildren that were in their early 20s were visiting with her and her husband. One of the young folks caught the virus, and this was followed soon after by the grandfather catching it from the grandchild. So the grandfather was taken to the hospital. He received some brief care there, and the family was given the option to letting him stay at the hospital or going home. The fact that the wife was a retired nurse, she chose, of course, to have her husband come home. Unfortunately, shortly after that, she caught the virus herself, was taken to the hospital, soon after put on a ventilator, and she passed away a short time later. I'm just relaying this very unfortunate, really heartbreaking event to encourage all of us in the public, on the board, of course, to remain alert to any possibility that could happen, to use care and caution, and encourage all of us here in our community, no matter what our age or circumstances, to do the same. With regard to our CCSD, and I believe this has been touched base on recently by David, David Pearson, Director Pearson, I should say, from Resources and Infrastructure, as well as Ray D'Enzo, our utilities manager. But I just want to highlight the fact that efforts are slowly moving forward to obtaining the finances to fund the much needed infrastructure improvements at our wastewater plant, our long neglected wastewater plant, as well as in the area of water storage. And these are certainly two of the most important concerns that have needed to be addressed for the well-being of the residents of our town as we move forward in the coming decade. So once again, I know I acknowledged John Alchin in the past, but I do want to once again give a tip of the hat to him to helping to initiate our partnership with the PG&E Sustainable Solutions Turnkey Program and for PG&E to continue to organize the needed engineering talent that are putting everything together regarding the energy conservation measures that are being implemented. And PG&E and the district are active in obtaining funding for these projects. And I just want to acknowledge the fact that your ratepayers' money is part of this process. And finally, I'm a little bit reluctant to even read this final paragraph here, but I'm just going to do it, I guess, because I can. So many residents in our community continue to be justifiably cautious and concerned as to how the district is dealing with the needed changes, what needs changing and improving, and how we serve the public, how we spend their money, especially with the recent rate increase on your water bill. And to some degree, this is kind of totally understandable to a lot of people. It appears that little has changed, that the board and the general manager, that we just kind of go around in circles. We follow the same old routine, hoping for a different result. And some people feel as if we're not really accomplishing much of anything. I just want to say that nothing's perfect. There's always need for improvement. But it appeared to me that for the most part, both staff, both in the office or out in the field, are working hard and doing their best to serve the residents and businesses of Cambria. I'm not trying here to be a cheerleader for the district. I have a sense of frustration. I'm not always happy with what I see continuing to take place at the CCSD with regard to our priorities. But what I do want to say is varied points of view, differing opinions as what's to best for the future, as well as the president of Cambria, are certainly at least being presented by various members of the board. And I do want to say that that always hasn't been the case in the past. So all I request is that, well, citizens of our town to continue to hold our feet to the fire, I would at least appreciate that they acknowledge when something does get done right. And above all, folks of all ages and incomes and backgrounds continue to be supportive and considerate of your fellow Cambrians, and especially thoughtful in your use and reuse of water and encourage others to do the same. So that's my president's report. Let's get back to the regular agenda and future.
President Farmer?
Yes, Director Rice.
I've got a couple of questions and an observation really quickly, if I might.
Of course.
What's the date of the FFRP benefit that you said was going to be online?
Well, thank you. Yes, that is going to be on Saturday, November 7th. It's going to start at 4 p.m. It's going to run about 2 hours. Let me give folks the website for that as well. FiscaliniRanchPreserve.org. And like I said, this is going to be folks that maybe haven't lived here 20 years, actually longer than that. Because folks, that if you've lived here 30 years, you have some understanding of what Friends of the Ranch Land did from 1992 to the year 2000, 8 years of seriously being involved in saving the ranch. For those of you that don't know that history and how hard, I'm grateful that I was a member, active member of Friends of the Ranch Land for 8 years. For those of you that don't know the background and how hard people worked to save the ranch and what has happened since then, just attending to get that history it would be really valuable to everyone that would arrive. So once again, it's going to be on Saturday, November 7th from 4 to probably about 6 p.m. Great musical talent are going to be there. Great interviews about the background of the ranch and everything else. And once again, FiscaliniRanchPreserve.org. And buy a ticket, make a donation, trying to raise $10,000. Thank you so much, Director Rice, for reminding me to do that again.
Okay. And then observation is that we've got a lot of folks that are kind of overlapping relating to the forest in town. And I don't know how much coordination is happening besides the fact that you attend Forest Committee and FFRP meetings and are right on this board. Right. So I don't know how much coordinating is going on, but a forest management plan is in the North Coast area plan, and we should be coordinating with these different groups to try and get that accomplished. I don't know. And we can get this answered offline, but you mentioned an EIR on the Covell Ranch. I don't know what project that might be for, but we can go into that at another time. I don't want to take the meeting time for that. I just wanted to register that it, so I don't forget, I'm telling all of us. and then Mr. Carmel, I have a procedural questions about the chair reports for the committees. If there is something, for example, like today where we kind of got off track, during our discussions on the committee bylaws, one of the things that was raised is how do we get a better record of what gets assigned to committees and such? And I don't know if there is a way, like if I hear something in a chairperson's report that I would like to react to hopefully get some consensus among the board about that, whatever that thing was. What's the appropriate way to try and address that without going off of the Brown Act requirements?
Well, I think briefly commenting on it is okay, but I think you probably take that discussion up on future agenda items.
Okay, because that's one of the things that I think that Vice President Steidel, and she can correct me if I misspeak, but that's one of the things that we were trying to, that we both kind of agreed would be helpful, is that during the chair reports, we're able to give some input onto that report. It just needs to be brief, apparently, is what I'm hearing right now.
That's correct. All the public gets to see is President's report or Finance Committee's report. So if you tail off into a specific subject, they're not going to have any idea that you're doing that. So brief comments and identifying the issue and maybe taking it up again, future agenda items.
If there were a written report as part of the agenda packet, because I remember when we were scheduling the committee meetings, we tried to schedule them so they could be coordinated with the regular board meetings. And I don't know how that's still going, but So future agenda items is probably the best way to accomplish.
Yeah, yes, indeed.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Director Rice. Vice President Seidel.
Thank you, President. I was having difficulty moving my mouse, believe it or not. It wouldn't get traction. I would suggest that maybe we would even open it to an item of conversation or discussion for the upcoming board meeting, because I do think that discussing that process is important, both in terms of recording and by getting the approval of the board majority for any action that's being requested of a committee.
All right, thank you.
Well,
we will certainly bring this up at the next agenda review meeting, as well as other items that were discussed earlier in this meeting. So any other suggestions on future agenda items? Well, seeing none, Director Howell.
Yes, I do want to make, I actually want to make a motion. I move that on the next agenda, which will be for our next meeting, that there be a discussion and consideration of a policy to fulfilling BOD board vacancies upon a resignation of a board member.
Second.
Okay. All right, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Director Howell.
We have a vote?
Well, that was a motion.
Excuse me. Pardon me. So a second?
I seconded.
Thank you. My apologies. So Haley, can we have a vote, please?
Director Howell?
Aye.
Director Rice?
Aye.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
Vice President Seidel?
Aye.
President Farmer?
Aye. All right. Thank you, Director Howell, for bringing that up. So seeing no further discussion with regard to future agenda items, we'll go ahead and adjourn to closed session. And Haley, do we have any folks in attendance that wish to comment on the closed session?
I do not have any members of the public that wish to speak on this item.
All right. So Haley, before we say adios and adjourn to closed session, I wish to thank you for taking 2.5 hours of your vacation time to spend time with us, and continue to enjoy your time on vacation, and have a safe trip home. Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, Haley.
And everyone else out there in the audience, be safe, be kind, be good to one another, and wear a mask. Thank you.
Can we have a 5-minute break before we have to start the closed session?
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for calling for that. Yeah, let's just, it's 4:32 now. Is 4:40 okay, Director Rice?
How about 4:45? That'll a little breathing room.
4:45. Okay. Keep in mind that we'll only have 15.
I don't know. Did other people agree? That's why.
That works.
No, Director Pearson's going.
Okay, I'll tell you what. It's 4:33. We'll come back at 4:43.
Okay.
Keep you on your toes. All right. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.